Hi, my name is Phil Metzger, and in 1992, I moved to Moscow, Russia. From there, I lived in the beautiful Central European country of Hungary, where my family and I spent the next 20 years living, learning, and sharing about Jesus. Different foods, culture, and language, but underneath it all, we discovered the most amazing people. We learned that to share the gospel effectively, we had to adjust. We had to cross cultures. Now we're back in the U.S., and we're discovering that this country is a melting pot of culture. This show is committed to helping Christians connect to those who think, believe, and live differently than them. This is Crossing Cultures. Welcome back to a new episode of Crossing Cultures, and the point of this podcast is to help people to learn how to respect and connect to people who might live, believe, and think differently than you do. And we've started a conversation with my friend Greg Elsasser. If you didn't watch the first episode, I'm really going to encourage you, just pause right now, go back to the first episode with Greg, and then continue with this one. If you've already been caught up, I'm glad you're back with us. I'm sorry that we had to stop it where we did, but this is going to be an incredible continuation of that conversation. We're digging deep into his life, into his personal story. I want to remind you that I don't represent all Christians, and no more than Greg represents all people who identify as gay. That's not fair. None of us can do that. And certainly, some of you Christians might be listening to the way that I'm engaging with Greg, and you might say, well, I don't agree with you, Phil. That's okay. I'm not expecting you to, nor do I assume I'm representing all of you. But I'm excited about the conversation that Greg and I are having. I want to jump right back into it, and hopefully you're going to be encouraged and blessed as well. So, Greg, do you mind? I want to circle back to something. Like, you're 15 years old when you were looking for attention.
For attention? Oh, or, well, you know, I think that was because I wasn't, listen, it wasn't that I knew I was gay and I was denying right. it. I just didn't let my brain think about it. I just didn't let it go there. As soon as there was a thought, I just walked away from it. Right. So when I was so depressed and my parents were like, what is wrong with them? They started putting me in therapy and I wouldn't tell the therapist what was wrong because, you know, because I wouldn't acknowledge that that was the problem. I did try to overdose. 15, but I was desperately wanting somebody to fix it, but nobody could fix it. And because they didn't know what the problem was. And to be fair, nobody in my life at that time, in my immediate circle, would have accepted it. They would have tried to fix me in terms of trying to reverse my sexuality, which what I went through starting in college. I spent a good 20 to 25 years trying to change my sexuality because that was the popular movement of the 90s is you don't have to be gay. The church has changed their stance on that now. The church is saying, oh, that didn't work because it didn't. Mm-hmm. But you can still struggle with sexuality and just be celibate. Just, you know, just it's something you got to deny. And so the church, again, has changed their mind on that. But you can come here as long as you're celibate. But I did go through some crazy stuff trying to revert my sexuality back to what was quote unquote normal. And some of them are really funny. I find the humor in everything. And some of the stuff they had me do, I always tell people the worst thing some people went through electroshock therapy in the 50s and 60s, but I was fortunate enough to, the worst thing I had to do was a Christian therapist had me walk around with a mason jar of poop. Okay. And they said, you can use yours or you can use somebody else's, which I was really grateful that I was given that option.
Yeah. It's good to have options.
Oh, yeah. I chose a dog and I carried around dog feces in a jar for about 2 months in a backpack. And I was supposed to once a day think about my sexuality and think about being with men and open it up and smell it until I threw up so that I would eventually revert my sexual preference. And they also had me doing things that I won't speak of that were very unchristian when it came to women to try to get me to be attracted to women. And that didn't work. But I mean, I read so many books, so many Christian books on how to revert. I remember I had to put oil on my forehead and I just broke out in a zit on my forehead. I mean, that did nothing but that. Crazy stuff. And then they changed their mind. The church said, oh, no, we were wrong. Can't revert your sexuality. You can just give it to God and be celibate.
Now, so let me ask you then, like,
When you were going to therapy, how many people knew what you were struggling with?
By college, I started telling therapists what the real, and then that's when they...
So through high school, nobody?
No, I don't think I told anybody in high school. I didn't even tell it to myself what the exact struggle with. It was just there in the back of my mind. It was just like, I knew it was there. College is when I started telling therapists and pastors. Remember, I didn't go to therapists. I went to pastors as well, both. Mm-hmm. And every one of them, and the pastors included, definitely the answer was, we can get rid of this. So that's when I started reading the books and trying it's aversion therapy. When I did the dog poop smelling thing, it's called aversion therapy, which is under the umbrella of conversion therapy. Conversion is just aversion is to make yourself sick at that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then, so you were just saying, and I apologize if I cut you off there. You were saying the church kind of changed their process from you need to be converted from the gay lifestyle to straight to you can be gay, but live a celibate lifestyle. That's kind of the new process.
And I would say they wouldn't say that you can be gay because 1 Corinthians talks about how your identity is no longer as gay. So they would say, they would just use the same terminology, SSA, same sex attracted. You could be same sex attracted. There's nothing wrong that will embrace you as a brother. Just you cannot act on that.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to go to that stance because the biggest ex-gay ministry in the entire world, which the church was behind and helping, failed. And its founder ended up going and marrying his boyfriend. So they just realized this is not working. So we got to have a new approach to keep these people from, living a life of monogamy and with one person and one person only. And see, that's another thing too, is human beings, Christian or not, they have a stereotype, which we all do. We all got stereotypes. The moment they think of a man and woman marrying, they think of their life together and what it's going to be like and having a child and they're going to love each other and be there and support. The first thing you think about when you hear of two gay men is sex. That's all you think. You just think about sex. You think about the details. You think about it. And it's such a little part, in my opinion. Are there stereotypes? Yeah. And why are those stereotypes? Because gay men perpetuate those stereotypes. Absolutely. You turn on the news and you look at gay parades and they're acting like the fool. Mm-hmm. And they're dressed scantily and they're acting immoral and gross. And so Christians and non-Christians like naturally think this is what the gay lifestyle is not. When, mostly in my world, my gay lifestyle is with my partner and we watch TV and we work and we fall asleep usually by 8:30. And we have a house payment and we're getting a dog and it's as normal.
Super boring is what you're saying here. Yeah.
It's as normal as any other couple that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so stereotypes, I understand. Gay men, if they want to change, if they want to see change and they want to see the church accept them, they're going to have to do some changing too. And I love my.
Right. Because it might be too easy to just put all the weight of burden on the church. Like they need to change their approach. They need to adjust, but certainly there's a reason why there's been this animosity. It's not one-sided.
Yes. It's very, and again, this is not everybody, but especially gay men, it's very fleshly. It's all based on the flesh. And that just does not give gay men a good, what do you call it? A good.
Yeah. Like a reputation. Yeah. The reputation is. And I think that's why I keep pushing this idea of like, we can't let this be an issue because like I might have somebody come to my church who so falls outside of that issue stereotype. But if I treat them according to the stereotype of what I've seen and what I'm used to, I'm going to do some real damage. Not that I should ever treat anybody according to a stereotype, but I think it is what happens on both sides. I feel immediately, I try to have conversations with people that I'll know are gay and we'll start talking. And then the minute that something comes up about our job or whatever, all of a sudden walls can go up because they assume how I am going to be towards them. And we've got these barriers on both sides.
Yeah, it's not fair. It's not fair to stereotype your response or you hear, oh, there's a Christian there. You go, and I still do it to this day when I'm like, oh, we probably can't go to that church. They won't let us there. And I haven't even asked. I haven't even looked. And so I am just, every human being uses stereotypes and I'm just as guilty of it as well.
And hearing each other's stories changes for me, it makes, it puts a human being to something. And it just, it doesn't mean every human being is that way. And that's the thing is, like, I think if we're going to look for answers to, like, well, that's not every single person. That's the point of, like, and I love what, like, Jesus loved the person, you know, like, who do we love? Love your neighbor as yourself. Like, the person that's right there, the person that's hard. You know, I was talking with another Christian leader named Dave Gibbons about this. And he said, I believe that when we talk about who's our neighbor, Jesus is reminding us in that story, it's the person that's the hardest for us to love. Like, the person that our natural inclination is not to love. How do I connect to that person?
I think that is, I mean, listen, I was Christian. I still am. I was raised Christian. I told you that. I raised my voice as Christians. I had a shift in view. But why is it that homosexuals are so hard to love? Even that I didn't understand. When I was, you know, not identified as gay, I still kept going, why is it so hard for the church? Why is this such an issue about how people live their lives privately? I get abortion because abortion, it affects another human being. And that's behind that and do something proactive about that. But with two gay people are living their life privately, why is that so hard? Why does that affect you? If when gay marriage was legalized, has it truly affected your life or the church's life in any way? If anything, it taught gay men and women that, hey, you need to respect the sacraments of marriage and monogamy. And I'm hoping that it calms the gay men community down a little bit when they see that there's an option to be monogamous with one person and not be flipping and flopping all over the place and dating that person and dating that person. So yeah, I don't understand why we are so hard to love. Cause you mentioned that, well, Jesus, love your neighbor. It's the people that is hardest to love. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And obviously, you know, and I normally would say this right away, but you are not representing all gay men, you know, and nor am I representing all, you know, Christian pastors or whatever. We're not doing that. This is the beauty of this. This is two people having a conversation and learning and growing. So I can speak to that, I think, but again, not to represent everybody, but I think there's a part of it where, and again, you know, this doesn't represent the whole Christian world, but I think there's a part of this where it became a very polarized thing when it was a politicized thing. So I think that, like, when Christians feel like they're losing ground in a political arena, you know, when there's this firm conviction, America was founded on Christian principles. I'm not arguing whether it's true or not. I'm just saying, like, for those who are really rooted in that, then they look at marriage as a sacred thing between a man and a woman, and they see any shift in that from our government as a removal of this Christian historical perspective. To your point, what do I as a straight man who's been married 25 years, what did I lose when gay marriage was legalized? As a person, the answer is exactly what you're thinking it is. I lost nothing. I lost absolutely nothing. Nothing changed. In fact, the term losing or winning doesn't even exist in that. It didn't affect me in any way. But if I see myself as, and my country is rooted in this Christian ethic, then I see the erosion of that ethic, and I see that particular issue and abortion as the two ethic that I'm losing those things. Does that make sense? And I'm not saying I think that's a correct or fair or valid, but I was not in America during Prop 8. I was not in America during all of these things. I was overseas watching this going, wow, this is a unique time in history.
No, and I voted for Prop 8. I was very much in the closet, and I voted for Prop 8. And even then, I just go, why?
You did?
Pressure, because, well, this is what you do as Christians. And I signed the thing, but I remember thinking, even though I knew I was gay and I was choosing not to live that lifestyle, why am I signing this? Why do I care how somebody lives their life? And I have known a lot of gay people, and I know a lot of gay people now, and listen, if I don't like a particular gay person, it's not because of their sexuality. It's because they're idiots. I mean, they're just some people I care for, you know, but it has nothing to do with their sexuality. And it's, like I said, I'm learning. So I'm still trying to figure out why Christians are so adamant on this one when there's other things that they're not so adamant about. There's not some other quote unquote sins that they're not. And I do get frustrated when I have very nice debates about with people about the issue, if they haven't even bothered to do the research or study. I read those five verses that said, don't lie with another man. And I read it about what Corinthians says. Okay, but did you study the historical context like you do the historical context with women having their hair long and men not having their hair long and little things like that and how to run a church, change our minds on? Did you at least take 5 minutes to study the other side and see maybe there is, no, I just study this side. Well, then I don't want to debate somebody who hasn't at least taken a few minutes to see what the other side is talking about, and maybe they could be wrong.
And so would you be happy? Like you would, no. Yeah. I think that's a good way of addressing it. Like, so then to, you know, throw this back is to say, if somebody did, if like somebody said, yeah, let's have this debate. Yes. I've read these books. Yes. I've considered historical context. Yes. I've done that. I still am unable to come to the place where you're at. You would respect that person.
Yeah. Are they going to treat me the same and love me as normal and we can still hang out if they're a person that I hang out with? Then absolutely, 100%.
Because at least they've done their part.
We're at a public school. We're mostly.
Yeah.
Yes. Most of the teachers at the public school I work at are very liberal and they have very liberal ideas. And I still enjoy going to lunch with them and hanging out with them occasionally after work. And I love them, but I don't hate them or because I disagree with them. And if anything the Trump years have taught us is, my gosh, can't we just love people even though we vehemently disagree?
And that's a big part of why I'm wanting to do this. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And most people that disagree with me will still have a relationship with me. But the fact that I have to say will still have a relationship with me is bonkers.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't understand why this issue, at the very least, because it is based on five and a half verses, why it couldn't be a secondary issue. Like we look at tongues or women pastors or some of those other things. You know, the Bible, Jesus, you could sum up the commandments with love your God with all your mind, soul, and strength and love your neighbor as yourself. Couldn't homosexuality thing be, hey, come to our church. We love you. Can serve here. We don't agree with you, but it's a secondary issue. We call you brother.
Yeah, that's a good... Right. And I was thinking about that the last month since we talked. I was thinking about that. And I think it really does come down to, because I was like, gosh, that's a good point. Then I thought, well, but why don't I just jump on and agree with you on that? I think it has to do with the idea of like when the scriptures, and it's not just one verse that I'm thinking of, but the idea of like, but if I believe as a Christian that practicing a particular lifestyle, any sinful lifestyle that I deem from the Bible to be sinful, if I love you, if I really truly love you and respect you, but don't agree, then I would still tell you, I'm not where you're at. I don't believe this. I'm concerned for you, like, because I don't see it as just a secondary issue. But that comes from relationship. That has to come through relationship.
And all I think, and again, I can't speak for the whole gay community either, or the gay,
yeah.
or the gay Christian community. I can't speak for all of them. I, as a gay Christian, would say, are you having those conversations through friendships about other issues in the Bible, or is it just this?
Right.
Are you talking to them?
Great point.
Their hatred for somebody and they don't love somebody. And the Bible talks so much about love. And go through the list. They're on the internet of list of sins listed in the New Testament. We can take the Old Testament off the table for a second and say, am I having conversations with people in my church about this because I know they do this one and this one and this one? Or is it just I'm highlighting homosexuality and I'm going to talk to them?
It's something that I mentioned in my and in introducing our conversations in these episodes is this idea of the red zone. You know, we talk about that with little kids and kids where they just kind of their mind shuts off out of anger or just intense emotions, and they go into the red zone. You know, pulling out hair, throwing things, or you know, kind of this extreme. And I think about Christians. I think that there's issues that drive us into the red zone, so to speak, where we are unable, and again, I don't speak for all Christians, I don't get the right to do that, but I see this where it's like certain topics come up and it's like we lose the ability to have like a healthy conversation because it's like, no, but it's wrong. Okay, but then here and then, no, but it's wrong. Okay, but what about that? No, it's just, and I can't get out of, you know, I'm stuck in this red zone. And I think we do have to learn how to get ourselves out of that red zone and it doesn't mean we're all going to agree and sing kumbaya, but we're at least going to have some civility in our conversation.
I hope so. You know, people have asked me, is it worth it? Now that it's been 2 years ago that you've done it, has it been worth it? And one thing you don't understand about, I'm assuming you don't understand, about gay Christians who love Jesus and are gay, is they have done everything in their power since they could possibly remember to change it and to pray, be on our knees saying, and feel awful. And you just think about the Christian youth in your church right now that have not told anybody, and they are crying and they are suicidal and they are thinking, I'm disgusting and I'm horrible. And that's what I went through for 30 some years. And the only response I ever got really from the church and the wacko therapists who try to have me do these weird things was, you need to plug into the Bible and more and pray more. Hmm. And that is not an answer. Right. And I think the answer is just, you got to suck it up. I mean, so is it worth it? Let me tell you, I've lost my children. All three of my children don't speak to me over this. For a while, I had lost my God. I went a year without having a relationship with God. And that is devastating to me that I did not have God for a year. I have lost ministry. I was involved in a very large ministry that I loved, and the people there that I loved, I've lost them. So is it worth it? Well, you don't understand the mental pain that I was carrying around. I'm not trying to make anybody sorry for me. The thoughts of death from about 8 years old, well, maybe like more like 10 or 11, continually for your entire life. And so to have those thoughts of death go away, as much as I love my kids, if they chose, you know, not to have a relationship with me, yeah, I'm relieved. And now I'm really relieved because I believe that I can have a relationship with Jesus and I am going to heaven. And even if this is a sin, he's forgiven me for it. And to walk around with relief and not more thoughts of death and pain, yeah, I'm it's worth it.
Let me ask you, you know, I want to circle back on this because, you know, we talked about when you're 15, and then again, there was a time in college, right, when you kind of made that attempt. And then in that time frame, you got married.
I did. Right. Second suicide attempt, I did, yes.
After your second suicide attempt?
After my second suicide attempt, yeah.
And you were married for...
Yeah, I was married about 3 years later, but look, this might make some of your viewers squeamish, but when I was 21, the reason why I tried to kill myself is I got a crush on my very close friend who was a very godly man and still is today. Do you know what that's like? To already hate yourself and feel you're disgusting, and now that you have a crush on someone who you love as a friend, but they're also Christian, and thinking you are a horrible human being, I just couldn't do it. And when I kind of got over that, that's when I realized you don't have an option and you want to have a family and maybe you can. I was working on the whole pray the gay away. My wife and I, before we got married, sat down and talked about it several times. And we both said, don't worry, God will fix you. We both said that. And I worked really hard for God to fix me. And I did it for 24 years before, like I said, I just could not do it anymore.
So marriage was like a next level of therapy almost, in a sense of like, hey, This is gonna be the thing that, you know, a lot of people get married with that same mindset of, this will fix my lust, this will fix my issue.
And it didn't. It did not even. And then now you have another human being you're trying to live with. It's hard enough to live with another human being when you're not dealing with those kind of things, because we're all narcissistic people and self-centered at heart. And so you're dealing with that on top of just a really messed up past and struggling with this. And it was problems from day one. It didn't mean there wasn't great times, but there were problems. And I decided, people say, you were so selfish to do this. I said, yes, I was selfish when I was 48 and I moved out and I decided to be gay. But I have lived for God. I lived for my parents. Then I went and I lived for my wife. And then I lived for my children. I'm like, can't I just have the second half of my years where I don't have to walk around in pain? That's how I'm not living for. That's how I'm living for myself, is to not walk around in pain. I don't think that's a lot to ask for. And it's not like I didn't go to pastors. And again, their answers were pray more, read the Bible more. That was not working. They did not have to live their lives. They'd give me that advice and then they go off with their wives and live a joyful life. And I was left struggling.
And what did you... You told me though that and this was fascinating to me, during the years you were married, especially when you guys started having kids, those were like, you know, the pain wasn't as bad, if I'm not mistaken, as you said that, something like that. Yeah.
It was the closest I've ever got to joy. And this is another thing I wish, it's Christian. And I wish we could stop saying this, but we tell people, listen, walking with Jesus, you will not necessarily be happy, but you will be filled with joy. And that just used to irritate me because I did walk with God and I still walk with God. And I never felt the joy that they kept telling me I was going to have. Never. I was never happy. I was following God because that's what I was told to do. And I wanted to love him and I did not want to go to hell. I never got to experience that joy. But my kids, having my kids, I was at least more settled. I was so actively busy raising those boys, and everything in my life outside of work was devoted to them, that I was calm. I wouldn't say I was joyful, but I was calm, and I loved them so much. It gave me, it just gave me kind of a distraction, and I just loved them, and I still do. And but when they got older, they got to be teenagers, and they were like, "We don't need you, Dad." I'll never forget my middle son. I just wanted to watch him play video games. Like, ugh, that's disgusting. Don't come in my room and watch me video games. And that's when I started to kind of crash. As the kids were older, they didn't need that. And I started to think, and I started to give in to the depression. And the answers weren't changing. The answers from the Bible, from Christians, and from God, what I was praying about, I didn't hear any difference. And my therapist, who was a Christian, said, Do your kids want to have a gay dad or do they want to have a dead dad? He said, because you will not be alive if you continue. And I just said, I want to live, and I want to live to see my kids grow up.
And you, so this third attempt was the real attempt.
That was the one where the doctor said I should have been dead.
Wow. And this was, give me the time frame of when that happened.
2 years ago. I had moved out of the home in February. And the guilt was overwhelming. And I just missed those boys so much that I tried to come home. And naturally, you know, my wife was still very upset and the kids were still upset and they had gone through a major shift. And I don't blame them for any of that. But they started in on me and I started to, and there were some words and hurt and pain. And I just went, what? Why do I have to live? He's like, well, you have to. Why? I mean, it's my life. I can choose to live or not. I don't care for this life. And I did believe I would be with Jesus. So I'm like, why would I not go be with Jesus? Why, I don't have to deal with this anymore. And so it was a very serious attempt. I wasn't conscious until almost 36 hours later.
And you saw suicide as a way to save face for your kids and for your family. I mean, like, you know, it's better to just be gone.
Yeah. And I think to some degree, deep down buried, there is a part of them that would rather have their dad had killed themselves than have the embarrassment of that their dad's gay.
Which obviously, I hope you know now, that's not true. But I mean, that would...
Yet, we speak. This has been too hard on them and it's been too much. And I don't blame them. I've had to give them their space. And there's a very good chance that I'll never be reunited with them. But like I said, I'm not walking around in pain anymore. Selfish as it is, I'm not doing it. And there's no way to put adjectives in to describe what it felt like.
I'm just thinking of your kids and all, like, you know, because I hear you as a dad, like, you know, it's just heartbreaking to be in the situation that you're in. The hope is, I think, you know, and we talked about this, like even just doing this, having this conversation, you know, maybe your boys will watch or listen and, you know, kind of know your heart a little bit from a different perspective.
Maybe. And you have to understand the divorce, I'll just be honest, it's not been pretty. It's been a very ugly divorce. And on both sides, we have both made humongous mistakes and have not acted very Christ-like throughout this whole thing. And our kids were the victims. And so they live with mom and they love their mother like I taught them to love their mother. And that's intuitive for them to love their mother and to defend their mother, which is what I also taught them. So I get it. I get why they circled around her and she needs that. But it's just too bad it came from a place like they had to feel like they had to choose one over the other. But I still love, you know what, our job as parents, and I realized that is not to get our kids to love us. That's not the job. And I think that's what we really push for. Our job is to raise them as we feel is right and to teach them the Lord's ways. And whatever else happens is secondary. And if my kids choose not to love me, that does not mean that I didn't do my job. Good kids. And I did my job and there's some peace in that. And then if they come around someday, that would be great.
Yeah. And I mean, you can certainly understand, having, you were kind of raised in that, even deeper than they have been, you know, and that kind of that, you know, your, you know, like you told me before, like, you know, a really strict Christian conservative home. And so it's like a, it's a whole shift in their heart and mind. And I'm sure that's not easy and all.
Yeah. And people will say, well, Greg, you caused this. You taught them Christian ways and now it's come back to bite you. And that is true. And I totally accept responsibility for lots of things. And that's one of them. However, when the issue of homosexuality came up, which it did not come up very often in a house with three boys who I could tell did not struggle with that. It just wasn't an issue. But they had, you know, they had a friend who was like 5 or 6 and everybody knew this poor kid was gay. And I, you know, they wanted to make fun of them and stuff. And I, immediately I stopped that. I said, I don't care. If anybody leaves a lifestyle that you do not agree with, you treat them with love. I said, I have friends who are straight people and they live together and they're not married. I don't agree with that, but I love them regardless. And so we hung out. We had a couple friends who were gay and they kids knew. And I said, we just treat them with love. So I did do at least that. I didn't say, which so many Christian parents to this day do, kick their kids out. You are not part of this family anymore. Get out. And they're on the streets. I definitely did not teach my kids that's how you treat homosexuals. Mm.
It's such these are hard things. And they're harder, they're compounded when it's just like, you know, it's an issue. And I think to your point that you're making, and I think it's something that I want to emphasize here is like, regardless of whether there's somebody in my life at this moment who is wrestling with their sexual identity, all around us, this is happening. And so my little comments, one little thing can set somebody off 3 steps away from me. You know, I guess what I mean is like, it might not be my immediate circle, but 2 circles out from me, I have a responsibility to reflect the heart of God, not my kind of like bias, you know, that like demeans somebody. And I mean, again, I even think about like anything that demeans another human being, we have a problem. This is not the heart of God in any way, shape, or form. It's now we've crossed the line. It's not about whether I think the Bible says one thing or not. When I get to the point where I'm demeaning another human being, I'm no longer representing the heart of God. And you've felt that long enough, a long, long time.
Yeah. And you know what? I should have done this at the beginning, and it's full disclosure. It's here we go, the trigger warning, the full disclosure, because I'm nothing but I'm trying to be honest now because I wasn't honest for so many years. And I'm still married on paper and I am living with my fiance. And so people like, oh, you know, how could you, you know, that is just so, I have had people say that you're just making this sin worse. And again, it's not to blame everything on the church. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Your church has told me that I'm going to hell anyway. So if I'm going to hell, what does it matter if I live with my fiance? And that's really how I felt that first year and a half. I'm like, God has been taken away from me. You took him away from me, church. So I guess it doesn't matter if I do anything that's legal according to the United States. There is no, you took away my moral absolute. So if you take away my moral absolute, I guess I can lie. I guess I can do this and this. And if I wanted to sleep with multiple people or marry multiple people, it wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. So I want my moral absolute there. You know, I do want that. But I think it's only fair to tell people up front that when they say, oh, I'm still struggling. I'm doing things in my life that I intuitively know are wrong. And I'm working through that. And, but God is good and God forgives sins. And, you know, he certainly forgave a lot of people who lived sexually inappropriately in the Bible and was clear that he loved them.
Isn't that the truth?
Examples of some people that in the Bible that like Solomon, for example, I never saw, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, where Solomon asked forgiveness for not abiding by God's original standards for marriage. I never saw that, but God said that he loved him and he was one of his children. Why can't I be treated like Solomon? Why can't Gabe be treated like Solomon, even if it is a sin? Just say, yep, it's a sin, but you know what? God loves you. The Bible says to put your faith and your trust in him and him alone, and that makes you saved. I did that. Why am I not saved?
Right. It's good questions. And it's challenging. You got to go here in a couple minutes. I don't want to, you got a class to teach? Okay, yeah, you got to get back to work. But I also think
there, but I do have to be there.
Yeah. You could be there, but not there, but there. Yeah. I think, that's why I wanted to have this conversation with you, Greg, was because you come from a place where a lot of our listeners in the church, and not all of our listeners are church people, but most are, and you come from a place where, like, you know where they're coming from. Like, you have a kind of a sense of, you know, you grew up in it. I know where you went. I know you came from that.
I came from that opinion, yes.
And then, I don't want to say like a full switch, because that's not a fair way of saying that, but I mean, it's now this change, and it's like, and you're in the journey, and that's what I really appreciated is like, I think we all have to stop getting to this place where we're like gurus sitting on our, in our ivory towers with like, this is it. When I think we're on this journey in life, I agree. I'm not where you are on these issues and on these things. And I said issues, but not the way I've been meaning it in a negative. And that's why I love having these conversations. Like, I would say to you, it's like, you know, you want to go back to moral absolutes, and this is like a longer issue. And I would say, yeah, but you're deciding what those moral absolutes are, but your argument back would be, so am I. And that's where we're all wrestling through these things. And I so appreciate that you would be willing to be so incredibly transparent, because you didn't have to. And, I'm really thankful for that.
And, you know, I'll be honest, a good motivation behind this, because like I said, at the heart, we're self-centered people. I have an agenda and I want my kids back. And I'm like, if I do interviews with Christian, and anybody helps reunite me and my children, I'll do it. I'll tell everybody everything. Mm-hmm. I'm writing a book about my life, and hopefully people will read it. I will do anything at this point to get my kids back. And I am a little bit self-centered, and that's why I'm doing it. I don't want to see people struggle like I do too, but I also, yeah. I know talking to a Christian radio host, and people are going to have some strong opinions, but hey man, if you love me like you say you do, and instead of spending time trying to debate me on the issue, which I know will get some of those comments, just help me get my kids back. Yeah. It doesn't matter if I'm a gay dad or not. It does not matter if I'm gay or straight. I'm their dad, and I'm a good dad. And so that's kind of where I'm at now, and just trying to.
Right.
Because I don't have to be reunited with Jesus, because I always had him. So that's a great relief. But I don't have my kids.
And I'm going to pray. Pray for you, because I knew you'd say yes. It wasn't much of a question, but, and I'm going to pray for that. Pray for God to bring some healing in those relationships, because that's painful. Those of you that have been watching or listening, I'm so thankful that you've been a part of this. And I hope you're learning, like, whether you've, or like, maybe there was like trigger points. You're like, oh my gosh, wait, what? I don't agree with that. That's the point. You don't have to agree with that to have these conversations. And to, you know, the goal of relationship is not to make sure everybody knows where you are right and they are wrong, but it's about relationship. It's about bridge building. And I believe God uses those things. And so, Greg, I'm super grateful that you would come on Crossing Cultures. And I love what you said. You had your own agenda, but our agendas align in the sense of like, let's have honest conversations. And it's really fruitful. So yeah, let me pray. And then I got to let you go to get to your class.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Father, thank you so much for the time that we've had. And it is so challenging, God, to like, when once human beings are involved in things, it gets messy, Lord. And I'm really grateful for Greg, and I'm really grateful for him being willing to share his story. And it just, my heart grieves for the thought that this human being made in your image on three different occasions felt like it'd be better to not be here anymore, and one very seriously. And it's just heartbreaking, God. And I just pray, Lord Jesus, that you would bring healing into the home, Lord, into his relationship with his kids. And I know they have their perspective, and it's not so black and white, and nothing is on that. I pray that you would bring healing, Lord. I'm thankful for this conversation. I pray that it would open our eyes and our ears and our hearts on multiple levels. And we thank you, God, that you do love us and that you do have a plan for our lives, Lord. And Lord, just help us to continue to have good, open discussions there where we can grow, and we can, we can become the people that you want us to be. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on. Thanks for doing this. Seriously. And we're, you and me, let's keep up this conversation and relationship.
Anytime.
Thank you for listening to Crossing Cultures. If you found value in the show, do us a favor and leave a review on iTunes or simply share the episode.